Melissa, could you just check where the members are? And maybe just give them a slight call. Could you just pardon us for the slight delay? We're trying to check where the other members are. But members, I think maybe those of you that are here could convey a message to other members. I really don't think we are going to move on well with members that are continuously not in the meeting. I really think it's just not on. You know, there's a tendency that sometimes people take advantage of the leniency of the chair. If you look at the members, we just have three from the ANC. I saw Pearl, four from the ANC. So it's quite a few of them that are not here. We have one from the DA, none from the IFP, none from the COP, none from the COP, none from the UCDP. I'm not sure, but the select committee, where are your members?
I have only one from the DA, one from the ANC. I have received three apologies from the ANC. So I'm actually expecting one member. Gigani? Yeah. It will be all from our side. Gigani? Yeah. She's coming, she's on her way. I operate with four members. The rest, they don't attend.
Sometimes I wish, I would say, this is the time that I would call off the meeting. If members are not here, not the other way around. Because we always tend to say, if officials are not here, it's very easy for us to call off the meeting. Sometimes it's good if we would say, today, members are not here. That is the reason why we are calling off the meeting. So then their parties can deal with them. Because it really doesn't show the seriousness of the business. We are here on a very serious thing. This is the AG's report and the CGE's report, but members are not here. But we are very quick to say officials are not here. Let's call off the meeting.
I'll agree with the chairperson and then their parties deal with them, whether it's ANC, whether it's COP or DA.
We will wait for Nelissa a bit and hear what she's got to say. Yes, honourable member.
Yeah, whilst you, Chair, you came with a suggestion and apparently it has been seconded, I would come with another suggestion that before we, if something like that happens, then you must take the names of those who are here, so
additional points is taken. Honorable Duncan.
Chairperson, thank you. Since we now have time, I think I want to appeal to the committee that when we have meetings like this scheduled, that we actually, as a committee alone, get together half an hour before the actual meeting of those who come to propose and also to present to us. I really think that we can start to consider that, because maybe there's a few technical things that we would like to discuss or a way forward on the reports or presentations that we know about. So I do appeal and I do ask that we consider putting that in place half an hour before the actual meeting starts. Thank you. That's my proposal.
I take your point, but then that will mean we would start at 9 o'clock instead of half past 9. Mm-hmm. Will that be fine with members? Because I know the buses come at 9 o'clock at sec. Honorable Dorothy and Honorable Mukhoro.
I'm not disputing what the Member Duncan is saying, but I'm thinking that this is an Auditor General's report, mm-hmm. which actually does not need any approval. What I would rather suggest is that after the Auditor General's report, before we meet with the CGG, we can then meet ourselves, maybe for 20 minutes before we meet with the CGG. But seeing that this is the Auditor's report, I don't think we need time before we meet ourselves.
What? I think Duncan was just saying on a matter of just general procedure in other meetings.
Yeah.
I think that's what she actually meant. Of two committees, that is the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee. We will be co-chairing the meeting with Honorable Marvin. We will be starting with the briefing from the Office of the Auditor General with regards to the CGE. Thereafter, we will be having a presentation of the report from the CGE. I think without having to waste time, we could start, not unless my co-chair has something to say before the meeting. Could we then welcome the Office of the AG? And may you just immediately take us through.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members. My name is Lawrence van der Vieren. For those of you who haven't met me yet, I'm the business executive responsible for the audit of the CGE. And to my right is Mr. Mukwekas, he's the senior manager responsible for the audit. Can I just quickly check, Honourable Chairperson, how much time are we allowed? Can I know how to structure our discussion?
Yes, you said it from half past 9 to 11, so we will extend slightly with a few minutes because of the time. time that we have wasted.
I think that would be fine, because we actually also have to leave by 11 to be able to make our flight back to Johannesburg. Honourable Chairperson, members, we've got a document that we've made available. It's got a heading audit outcome comparison 2008-2009. Can I just check that everyone has picked that up?
Just a minute. Members, do you have the document? I don't. Honourable Mother also doesn't have it. Now all have the copies, do we? No, not yet. Robinson, do you have a copy? Do we all have copies? You too.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think what I would like to do is just to maybe just quickly explain to the committee the structure of the audit report. It's something that you we'll deal a lot with in future. We've received the invitation also for a briefing on the National Youth Development Agency, so most probably we will see each other again next week. So it's very important to understand the structure of an audit report. Our audit report is mainly divided into three sections. The first part, we express an opinion on the financial statements. And if you want to follow in the annual reports, it's on page 89 of the annual reports. You will find the Auditor General's report. So typically then, if you look at page 90 of that report, at the bottom there you will find the opinion that we've expressed on the financial statements. The second part of the report deals with what we call the report on other legal and regulatory requirements. There we focus on where we report our findings on our audit of predetermined objectives, and we report any other non-compliance with key legislation like the PFMA and Treasury regulations, or even enabling legislation. And in the last part of the report, you will see the heading called internal control. What we do is whenever there's negative reporting in an audit report, either a qualification or report of findings of performance information or compliance, we will link that to one to three of the following three areas: whether it's a leadership shortcoming, whether it's a governance issue, or whether it's what we call a financial management issue. So in the case of the CGE, you will see we've highlighted on the internal control that there's a leadership issue that needs to be addressed, and there's governance issues that we need to address. Then you will also find, if you look at page 90 at the bottom, just under the audit opinion, there's a heading emphasis of matter. Now, it's very important to understand this part of an audit report. Contrary to what people sometimes believe, we don't put things under emphasis of matter because we don't want to qualify, or because we believe it's not material enough to qualify. There's very specific requirements of what we are allowed to put under emphasis of matter. And it's really exactly what the heading says. It's items which the auditor wants to emphasize to the users. So if you look in the case of the CGE, you will see we're merely highlighting that there were material losses. We're highlighting to the user that there was a restatement of corresponding figures. We're highlighting to the user that there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we're highlighting to the user that there's a going concern risk. For instance, if the losses were not fairly stated and it's material, we would have qualified, then you will not see it under emphasis of matter. When we are happy with the amounts disclosed in the financial statements, example, in the case of the CGE, is the irregular expenditure on page 90. Normally, we would emphasize irregular expenditure because an entity is supposed to disclose it in the financial statements. So if it's disclosed, it's accurately disclosed, we will just emphasize and draw your attention to it. But in the case of the CGE, we were not satisfied that the amounts that were disclosed were complete and accurate, and therefore incident under qualification. Before I deal with the audit report in detail, let's have a quick look at the summary that we've handed out to you on the comparison of the audit outcomes. And we're hoping that this document would give you some insight into the history of the CGE, and that you can see from that document that there was some improvement in the CGE. For 809, the CGE received a disclaimer of an audit opinion. You will see that in the left-hand column, the heading says disclaimed. And for the 910 financial year, the heading says qualified. Now, a disclaimer of an opinion is one of the worst opinions that an auditor can express. The auditor then says, I cannot express an opinion on these financial statements, whether they are fairly stated or not. The basis for a disclaimer of an opinion is normally because the auditor cannot get adequate substantive evidence to be able to express an opinion on the financial statement. So historically, the problem at the CGE was we could not get the documentation that we required to conduct our audit in the manner that we wanted to. And you can see the long list of items listed there for the previous year that we had challenges with. So if you now look at the 9-10 year, you will see it's a qualified report, which means except for those four items listed there, we are satisfied with the financial statements. So definitely an improvement in the audit outcomes for the CGE. I will take you now in a bit more detail through those qualified items in the audit report. The second part of our document deals with the report on predetermined objectives. We are currently still not expressing an opinion on the report on predetermined objectives in the audit report. However, we still report factually on our findings. And if you look at the factual findings for the 2 years, you will see that in the past we actually had the challenge was that there was no strategic plan. There was no quarterly reporting, and we didn't receive the performance information in time. Okay, so that's actually not good at all. For 19, we did receive the information. So it basically gave us the opportunity to take the audit one step further to now look at how accurate and complete and well presented this information is. Our findings then basically were the following. There was a lack of a proper system of internal control on performance information, inadequate quarterly reporting. There's a requirement that there should be quarterly reporting. Reasons for variances between actual achievements and the planned achievements were not properly documented. Reported information not consistent with the planned objectives, indicators, and targets. And the reliability of the performance information could not be determined. So we are hoping that this summary document will help you to give you a view of from previous years towards this year, and you will see in the annual report that the CGE also extensively deals with the issues at hand. I also had a brief look at the presentation which they might be doing later, and it addresses most of the issues that we will talk about. If we look at page 89. So in the case of the CGE, a qualified audit report, you moved from a disclaimer to a qualified audit report. The first item that was qualified is trade and other payables. So basically what this relates to, it relates to the leave provision for the employees of the CGE. What should happen in terms of the accounting principles is that at year end, the CGE should determine the number of leave days that officials have not taken. convert that into a rand value, which is linked to the different salary scales of the individuals. And that provision they should bring into their books, because that leave will either be at some stage be paid out, or it will be taken by the individuals. Now, in the case of the CGE, there's limits, and what happened is that they basically made a provision for more than the maximum number of days. So it's something which can actually, if you want to think about what should be done to rectify this, it's a matter of doing the calculation based on the maximum number of days. Not something that is very difficult to fix going forward. However, if you look at the second part on page 19, there is a bit of a challenge in that we could not obtain reasonable assurance that the remaining balance for leave pay is properly stated. So this has a bit to do with record keeping, ensuring that each individual's leave days is accurately accounted for. So it means you should have a proper system for leave. If someone takes leave, the leave should immediately be recorded, should immediately be deducted from the number of leave days available. And then we've converted that into the rand value. So the underlying principle is record keeping, doing proper calculations. It translates into rand values, unfortunately, which is material in the end of the day. But we honestly believe that this is something that could be dealt with in the short term. It is not something that should take years to fix. It's something which the CGE should be able to rectify in the 10-11 financial year. The second paragraph that we qualified was the staff cost. And here we sit with a situation where there's a difference between the payroll system and what is in the financial statements itself. Most entities have got a separate payroll system that they run every month to pay the staff members, and the total of that for the month should be exactly what is recorded in the general ledger, which in the end ties up with the financial statement. So if your monthly payroll is 1 million rand, and you add that up, you get to 12 million, and you go to your income statement, you should see 12 million rand there for staff costs. It's one of the tests that we as auditors do to make sure that those amounts tie up. In the case of the CGE, it didn't tie up. And there was a difference of 3.1 million rand for the current year, and for the previous year, 3.2 million rand. Once again, something which the CGE should be able to rectify in the short term. A reconciliation should be done on a monthly basis. We have discussions with all our auditees, and we also discussed it with the chairperson when we met the other day. We've got a project where we discuss with all our auditees what we call key controls. So we give them a document which has got very basic key controls, things that we believe if the auditee does that right on a regular basis, it would ensure that the financial statements are fairly stated in the end of the day. One of those key elements that we highlight is monthly reconciliations. So monthly the CFO should take the payroll, it's 1 million rands, how much have I accounted for in the ledger? 1 million rands. If there's a difference, the CFO should resolve it at that stage and not leave it to accumulate, that it becomes a material figure, and when we come around to audit, it's then an issue which is difficult to resolve at that stage. So key reconciliations, very, very important.
Just on that one, I don't want to miss it. What does that then mean? Could you just speak more to that, if the two do not agree? I mean, how do they then reconcile at the end of the month? What happens?
Chairperson, that's where the risk lies. If your actual payroll is let's say a 1 million rands, and you've accounted for 1.2 million rands in your financial statements, what is the 200,000 rands? Is it other payments that you've made salary related that you didn't do through the payroll system, which you directly just paid out against that account? One of the risks is, for instance, tax system. That will ensure that your IRP files, which you issue in the end of the day for the tax purposes, are accurate and complete. So if there's a difference, it should be investigated. It's possible that someone gets paid who's not on the payroll. You know, so we don't know why there's a difference in the case of the CGE, and that's why as auditors we have to qualify. So it could be various reasons that leads to that difference, and that's what needs to be investigated by the CFO. Are we paying someone who's not on our payroll? Why? Why is he not on the payroll? Because if he's not on the payroll, he will not get a IRP 5 certificate for tax purposes in the end of the day. Is it a valid employee? Why are we making... Sometimes what happens is someone joins the organization, and in the first month, they need a lot of information to get him onto the payroll system. They're waiting for the information. They don't have all the information. So what they do is they just write him a check for his salary, and they just account for it against salaries. That will cause a difference. So later on, you'll have to go and put that through your payroll system to make sure it accumulates properly in your payroll system. So it's very basic controls which a CFO should execute on a monthly basis to resolve those differences. Now, you can think, if you think about the examples that I've given you now, if you leave this for a year and you sit with a 3 million rand difference at year end, it's going to take you a while to try and resolve it. And like in this case, you might not be able to do it in time. So that's why the focus is on those key controls. Do you do that reconciliation on a monthly basis? That's why we believe if the entities focus on those key controls, it will make a huge difference on the audit findings at the end of the day. And that's why the focus should be on all of those charged with governance to make sure that the key controls are there. The next paragraph...
Can I say to members that mainly this session is just an information session for us. There's not much we are going to question the AG on. So just drop the questions. I'm sure most of them will be related to the CGE itself. So I'm just alerting you that while the presentation is going on, let's drop some of these questions for the CGE.
Yeah, but members are ever welcome to ask questions for clarity from us, so that's why we're also here to make sure that you understand the auditing concepts and some of the other important things which would help you in executing your oversight responsibilities. The next paragraph that formed part of the qualification is irregular expenditure. As I've explained earlier on, there's a requirement in terms of the PFMA that irregular expenditure should be disclosed in the financial statement. So an entity should itself disclose its irregular expenditures in the financial statements. We will then audit that for accuracy and completeness. In the case of the CGE, during our audit, we picked up differences. Irregular expenditure that was not disclosed in the financial statements. And the CGE did not amend its financial statements to include those amounts as well. Therefore, we had to qualify to say that amount that is disclosed for irregular expenditure is not accurate and complete. The further dimension with regard to irregular expenditure is, and that's most probably part of the focus of the committee, is why is there irregular expenditure? Because there shouldn't be any irregular expenditure. Now, in the case of the CGE, they did not have a supply chain management unit. Now, it's a small organization. We understand that. However, interestingly enough, the supply chain management regulations require that you should have a supply chain management unit. So even if it's just one or two persons who as part of their function is responsible for that, you should have such a unit. And there's really a lot of rules and regulations and legislation that a supply chain management unit must comply with in procuring goods and services. Whenever they do not follow the right processes and procedures, it results in irregular expenditure. And that's the irregular expenditure that needs to be disclosed in the financial statement. Now, in the case of the CGE, they also did not have a proper system to then go and look which procurement were not done in accordance with the supply chain management policies and procedures, and therefore for their disclosure of all the irregular expenditure is not accurately and complete. And therefore, as auditors, we are saying that we cannot express an opinion whether that disclosure note in the financial statements is fairly stated. So if you want to look at the details of the irregular expenditure, you can go to page 127 of the annual report. And you will see that there's two notes that deals with the irregular expenditure. It's note 18 in the financial statements and note 20 in the financial statements. How does irregular expenditure work is, if you've got irregular expenditure that was incurred in the previous year and it has not been condoned by National Treasury, that balance carries forward to this year, and this year's irregular expenditure just gets added onto that. And you will see that in the case of the CGE, if you look at the bottom of page 127, there's currently 14.8 million rand of irregular expenditure that's awaiting condonement. And it's not to say that condonement will be given. Condonement is only given in very, very specific instances. In other instances, National Treasury will not give condonement. So going forward, it's very important that this irregular expenditure must be properly investigated in terms of the PFMA. It needs to be determined should someone be held responsible for it. Did the entity receive value? Because in some cases, they did receive value. It's just a matter of they haven't followed the correct process. So it's a very detailed process that needs to be followed. But currently, for a small entity like the CGE, 14.8 million is quite a significant number. They also have got, if you look at the top of page 127, they've got an annexure B, which is on page 130, which gives more detail of the individual cases.
Excuse
of
me.
The individual.
Before you go there, can we go back to 127 again? I think I missed your interpretation in relation to condonement. Would it mean to waive?
Yeah, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, with regard to irregular expenditure, the PFMA requires that all irregular expenditure needs to be investigated. Now, like I say, it's not to say that the entity did not receive value in all cases. That's a very difficult determination that needs to be made in the end of the day. You get various instances which can lead to irregular expenditure. So that's why the circumstances needs to be investigated before one can just say, look, no value was received. So one must be very careful to make a judgment call to say, well, 14 million rands, no value was received. That's why each individual case needs to be investigated to determine that the entity receive.
But then it will be worthless, you know, to investigate something that you know that is not there. According to your own investigation, is there a possibility that we can recover some of the money? Because investigation also is not for free. It means there will be money that has to be contributed towards that investigation, you know, and it can even cost more than that. So is there a possibility of us recovering any cent?
Chairperson, I think when we talk about investigation, we must be careful. Not all cases would warrant an independent investigator being appointed to investigate it. One needs to look at the individual circumstances. If the supply chain management policy, for instance, determines that for procurement under a certain value, you need to obtain three quotations, and three quotations were not obtained, there was only one quotation, it can be purely a matter of not following the process. In that case, there may be no need for any further investigation. You just need to determine why did it happen. Was the official not aware of the policy? Or was there something else maybe behind it? Once you need investigations, is when you can determine that maybe there's something else that might be wrong here. Let's say, for instance, you have the three quotes, but you say from where we sit whether it would be worth it. I think the first thing is that management must first go and determine exactly what the circumstances were in each of those cases. In the case of the CGE, the big problem was that they did not have a supply chain management unit. So most probably in their case, most of these irregular had to do with process, not following the right process. So one must first go and look at that, and if there's anything from that that indicates that there might be something more serious, then one will have to investigate it further. Remember, part of this...
I suppose what you are trying to say there is you first have to determine what actually took place. And then from there we move whether or not to investigate.
That's...
Members, sorry, I will tell you why I'm asking that question. Because at the end of the whole process, we'll have to, if we can't find anything, we'll have to condone them. We'll have to waste that money. So investigation might take time, might take money, you know, might cost money. So I'm saying... I don't know. Maybe we'll have to meet in committee after the Auditor General has left, you know. Mm-hmm. That's something that we need to... But if you look at the amount, it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And if we'll have to put some more investigations on it, it will be time-consuming and all that, you know. So... Thanks, Chairperson.
Not open for questions. No, I do not. We were just using our powers as chairs. Angie, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can maybe just clarify, I think it's important to note that in the case of the CGE, part of this 14 million balance was subject to the special investigation that was done. So you must just take that into account. So part of this has already been part of two investigations, one by the Public Protector and one by the Auditor General. So that's why we are saying that if there's additional cases that one needs to make a thorough consideration whether there's a further need for investigation, because some of these cases might just be a matter of not following the policy. But I think the ones which had a risk to it, most of them have already been investigated in the context of the CGE, and there's two special reports on that. With regard to condonement, I think one must just take note of the condonement requirements. The current practice note by National Treasury determines that the entity that's got the authority to initially issue the legislation or the regulation or the approval, that's the entity that can condone. So in most cases, condonement must go through National Treasury, and in some very limited cases, condonement can be done by the accounting authority itself. But that's very limited. So most of the cases have to be referred back to National Treasury in the end of the day. And you will find that there are many cases where National Treasury do not condone regular expenditure, and then it creates some other challenges. So I think to conclude, part of this 14 million has already been subject to investigation, and that is dealt with separately. The next item that we qualified on was contingent liabilities, and the basic problem here is that an entity should disclose in its financial statements all contingent liabilities. Now, contingent liabilities normally arises from items such as legal cases. Someone sues you for an amount of money. And part of the audit process for us to determine the completeness of that disclosure is to do confirmation with the attorneys that the entities use. Now, in the case of the CGE, we could not get the confirmation from two of the legal advisors that the CGE used. Therefore, we could not sign off to say that disclosure is accurate and complete. Once again, something which should be fixed in the short those were the key items which led to the qualified audit report. Under the emphasis of matter, we just emphasized to the user of the financial statements that there were material losses, and you can have a look at the details of that. It's included in note 9 to the financial statements. We highlight to the user that there was restatement of corresponding figures. Because the prior years were disclaimed audit opinions, the CGE had to go back and try and restate the figures with supporting documentation as far as possible to enable us to audit it again. So we are just drawing the attention of the user to that, and the details of that is disclosed in note 16 to the financial statement. Then ongoing concern, and there we refer you to note 23 of the financial statements, and you can get the details of that on page 129. If you look at the financial statements of the CGE, and I see the CGE is also going to discuss it with you in terms of their slides. If you look at page 98 of the financial statements, you will see that the CGE made a loss in 2009 of more than 10 million and a loss again in 2010 of 2.5 million. Now, if an entity continuously makes losses, it ends up in a situation where there's not enough cash to pay your future commitments when it's due. And that is what is referred to as the going concern concept. Now, even though the CGE is established in terms of the Constitution, it will always be there unless there's amendments to the Constitution. However, it doesn't mean that the entity will always be able to pay its creditors when payment is due. Therefore, as auditors, we have to highlight that in the audit report, so that entities that does business with the CGE is aware that there's a possibility that they're going to wait for the bills to be paid. So it's a very important aspect, and therefore the CGE should, going forward, have plans in place how to turn the situation around to get into a positive cash flow situation again. You cannot keep on overspending on your budget, because National Treasury will not necessarily just give you additional funds to make up for those losses. So that's basically why we are highlighting that to the users of the financial statements. Then if we look at our second part of the report, which deals with the report on legal and regulatory requirements, the first section that we deal with is our audit of performance information. Now, the performance information is dealt with in the first part of the annual report of the CGE. And I think it starts there around about on page 28 of the annual report. And it goes up to about page 81. Our findings relates to the following. First of all, we are saying on page 91 that the CGE did not have a proper system of monitoring the performance achievements against the predetermined objectives. And when we talk about a system, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to have a very powerful computerized system. It can be a manual system, but it must be a system that's important in this context is, of course, the role of your internal audit section. Your internal audit section should assist management throughout the year to go and test this performance information to make sure it's accurate and complete and that it's substantiated by proper substantive documentation. That will assist the entity so that when we come around for the external audit, it would have already been subject to internal audit and management would have been in a position to address the findings. So the role of internal audit cannot be underestimated. So the starting point in this process is first of all to have a proper documented system. And that's also a requirement of section 38(1)(a), 1 and B of the PFMA. The second part deals with the requirement of Treasury Regulation 5.3, which requires that the entity should actually report on a quarterly basis on its performance information. So it creates a mechanism that on a quarterly basis you need to review your own performance against predetermined objectives. You need to make sure that you've got the adequate substantive documentation. You need to look at, are we at risk of not achieving our objectives? Because in the end of the day, if you do not achieve your objectives, you will have to explain why the objectives were not achieved. And remember, there's a link between the objectives in the strategic plan and the budget. So if you receive a budget of 60 million to execute a specific strategic plan, and you've only executed 50% of that plan that you used the full budget, then it creates some cause for concern. So from an oversight point of view, that may be something that you could consider. Then if we look at the presentation of performance information, we are reporting that the reasons for major variances between planned and actual reported targets were not explained. If you go through these pages, which I indicated to you earlier, you will see there's many instances of partially achieved or in process or not achieved. Now, very important is for the user of this financial statements and this annual report, proper reasons should be given why not, so that one can determine where does the problem lie and what needs to be done to correct it. But part of the quarterly monitoring process is that the entity should realize throughout the year that there might be challenges and that they already then put systems and processes in place to try and achieve all the objectives in the end of the day. If we then look at usefulness of reported information, we then focus on consistency, relevance, and measurability. Consistency is that you need to report on your performance information in a consistent manner so that you can compare year on year. You need to report on what is relevant. There needs to be a clear logic link between the objectives, the outcomes, the output, the indicators, and the performance targets. Then measurability. If you cannot measure it, then it becomes meaningless in the end of the day. So how you formulate it, you should formulate it so it should be easy to measure it. And very important is, for instance, there should be time frames linked to your strategic objectives. It can't be open-ended. You need to be able to determine in your strategic plan already by when do you want to accomplish what, and that should be stated in your strategic plan, and that is what you should disclose in your report on your performance information, and that's what you need to measure yourself. Now, in the case of the CGE, we reported that the reported information is not consistent with the planned objectives, indicators, and targets. The Commission has not reported throughout on its performance against predetermined objectives, indicators, and targets, which is consistent with the approved strategic plan. In other words, what you will find in this report, in the annual report, you will have difficulty in tying it up exactly with the strategic plan. The principle is that if you look at this strategic plan and you look at this report here, you should be able to compare it on a line-by-line basis. Mm-hmm. so they should, so they should be at least that approval. That presents an entity from throughout the year realizing, oh, we're not going to be able to meet this objective, and then changing the objective all the time. So that's the whole purpose behind that. Our next focus area was then on the reliability of the performance information. And there we look at the validity, accuracy, and the completeness. Remember that ultimately the Auditor General will have to express an opinion on the performance information as well. And that's why we are now already focusing on what do we need to be to enable us to express an opinion on the performance information. And for that we, for instance, need supporting documentation which is accurate, valid, and complete. In the absence of that, we will not be able to express an unqualified opinion on performance information. Therefore, entities should have proper systems in place to ensure that they do have information available to substantiate the achievements, which is valid, accurate, and complete. We have reported to the following. Reported targets were not valid, accurate, complete, and no supporting source information was provided. So it's very, very important. You might have achieved it, but if you cannot give us the documentation to prove that, then we cannot confirm the validity of that statement in your annual report. And therefore, a proper filing system, a proper system of everyone knowing what kind of information to keep in what format is very, very important. The last item in the audit report with regard to compliance deals with compliance with the Treasury regulations and the Public Finance Management Act. And with their report that not all invoices were paid within 30 days of receipt of the invoice as required by the trade regulations. Now there might be a link here between the going concern risk and the payment of the creditors, because it's possible that they were not always cash on hand to pay the creditors within 30 days. So it's very important to get that balance right, because there is a regulation which requires you to pay within 30 days. In private sector, you would tend to find that the business processes would be to let your creditors wait as long as possible and to get your debtors to pay as quick as possible. However, in public sector, there's a specific regulation which requires you to pay your creditors within 30 days. Then the second bullet deals with a supply chain management unit was not established as required by the Treasury regulation. And you can see, to a certain extent, the impact of that on irregular expenditure. That's page 93. Page 93, the second bullet. The third bullet, the Commission did not report irregular food litter waste expenditure to National Treasury as required. So the legislation and the regulations are very strict. If you do incur irregular expenditure, you should have a system to identify it. Once you've identified it, you must report it to the National Treasury. And then furthermore, you should have your processes in place to investigate the irregular expenditure. The next bullet, monthly information was not prepared and submitted to the National Treasury and the Executive Authority as required. The next bullet, the internal effectiveness of the internal audit function. It's a requirement that all entities should have an internal audit function. Very important, that internal audit function should also be effective. And I think if one look at the report of the CGE, one realizes that it's an institution that needs a very strong internal audit unit that would timely report to management and the audit committee on any weaknesses of internal control or any non-compliance. And then linked to this is that the Commission does not have a risk management strategy which includes a fraud prevention plan. Very important. It's a it's a regulatory requirement that all entities must do a risk assessment on a regular basis, and it should have a fraud prevention plan. I think if one look at the reporting on the CGE, one realizes that this is a mechanism that should be there. It's first of all a legal requirement, but secondly, something very important, and no entity can go without that nowadays. Under internal control, we've then reported on that the reasons for the qualification, the items on the performance information and the non-compliance with laws and regulations, if we pull it through to internal control, we are saying that under leadership, the Commission did not have sufficient monitoring controls to ensure compliance with applicable laws and regulations of internal control. So leadership should put the monitoring controls in place. Furthermore, internal policies and procedures of the Commission with regard to performance information are not sufficient to ensure reliable reporting. So an entity should have also policies and procedures dealing with performance information. Otherwise, the people in the organization will not know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. Then we also say that the Commission does not have adequate skills resources capable of implementing the financial reporting framework and performance management requirements. It's very important. Under governance, we report that the internal audit unit did not fulfill the responsibilities as set out in legislation in accordance with accepted best practice and standards. Furthermore, they did not assist the accounting officer by evaluating internal controls related to compliance with laws and regulations and control, and by developing recommendations for their enhancement and improvement. That is the core function of an internal audit unit. They should sweep ahead. They should inform management about the risks, about the controls that are not effective. So when the external auditors come around, the issues have been addressed already. The idea is to have an internal control environment which is effective and which is stable. Those reconciliations that we talked about, it should be done 12 out of 12 months. You know, not just at year end, for instance. Internal auditors are supposed to raise that throughout the year. The report should be submitted to management. And if you look at in this annual report, you will find a report of the audit committee. The audit committee is a committee which should specifically focus on internal and external audit findings. And they should have a formal report in the annual report. Have a look at that report and you will see that the audit committee also reported that the reports were just draft reports which were given to management. So it's very important that the internal audit function be done properly going forward. Lastly, Chairperson, on page 94, we just referred to the investigation report, and that report has since been, it has been discussed where some of the members of this committee were present, and it has since been formally tabled. So that is also available. With that, Chairperson, I will hand over for any questions.
Thank you very much. We are empowered. If I had my way, I would say no mercy. Okay, let's take questions. Mam Rabudibe, Daryl, and the Hope. Okay, let's first take the first three.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my question still flows from the question that you were asking, because I wasn't quite clear about this irregular expenditure. I just wanted to make myself clear to understand it as to whether you were saying irregular expenditure is investigated in order for it to be determined whether it can be condoned. want you to give us an example, you know. Let's say, for example, there was this irregular expenditure, and after investigation, because I do understand that it's not a costly exercise, it actually just, you know, exhumed time, because it's not outsourced, you know, it's an internal thing. But can I just get an example of an irregular expenditure that can be condoned and that which cannot be condoned? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, through you, first of all, I'd like to thank the AG's department for their presentation on the audit findings for the CGE. The 2008-2009 report, of course, is shocking, and the 2009-2010, to put it mildly, is not much better. I don't want to go through all your findings again, but for example, there's no internal controls, there's no audit, the internal audit department, there's no supply chain. Is virtually non-existent. There is no leadership, and eventually there is doubts whether there should be an ongoing concern, and this was taxpayers' money that's been put into to Selfridges every time, which is shocking indeed. To be a little bit more on the positive side, what is there no way? I know the Auditor General just conducts an audit and does that aspect of it, but what worries me now is on the new setup. We have replies from the Commission of Gender Equality. One of the things that your department found that there were no skills bases. So they say, yes, they're advertising for the skills. Yes, they're advertising for the right people to put in an internal controls or and will now have a supply, a management control. Is there no way that somewhere during this financial year one could check that these things are actually in place? I'm frightened we go for another year and we end up back in the similar situation. Also, two things coming up that I just want to ask is coming back to there is litigation on the go. I see somewhere in the report it says there would be a court case in September around about. Has that case, that the litigation taken place? Have you got any feedback on that? Also, there was a forensic investigation with regard to unauthorized expenditure, particularly on procurement procedures. A lot of it might be just technical stuff that was not put in place, but there was certainly a lot of internal controls just not existent, for example, contracts. Are we happy that, or is there any way, or is there some other body that can check that these things are taking place, that they are now being constructed, that we don't go for a whole full financial year, and finally back in the same position again? Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Benson. I'm just looking at this report of the Auditor General first. I'm looking at where you got the column unchanged, improved, or increased. And I would like to know how to measure your improved there, that you say now they improved. Since the disclaimer, so yeah, that is what to measure. And am I correct by saying the CGE has an act, but that act is outdated. It's supposed to be amended. Because here there's quite a lot of problems here. And that act that the CGE is using is not in line with the Constitution and neither the PFMA. So I'd like to know whether I am correct in saying it. Because okay, remember, sir, Mr. Lawrence, the act is outdated, that we know, and we need to have a chance to amend it, and it should be amended, because it's the Act of 1996. And then I'd like to say, when it comes to irregular expenditure, am I correct, because it gets a big amount, to say that it's one-third of the full amount they receive, that irregular expenditure? Thank you.
I want you to respond to those three questions, then we'll take another set of questions. But the point that Honorable Malchas has raised in terms of the laws that govern CGE, I think that's the basic thing. And they can be condoned based on that, because there was no legislation that that was guiding them, therefore it can be, they can be condoned. So this thing is tricky.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, for saving me after three long questions, then it makes it easier for me. I think on the example of irregular expenditure, I'll give you an example of where it has been condoned in the past. You know there's a regulation that prohibits national department and constitutional institutions and public entities, 3A public entities, for instance, to enter into finance lease transactions. What then happened is that there was a transversal contract for the lease of photocopiers and fax machines, and that transversal contract was in fact a finance lease. So what has happened is that National Treasury has condoned that irregular expenditure. Even up until today, how it works is you will disclose it as irregular expenditure, but directly underneath that you will indicate it as being condoned. The reason being, there's nothing underhanded in it, and there's value in the end of the day, because you use the photocopier or you use the fax machine. So it's just a technical issue, and therefore not a problem to condone it. Then you can get sometimes you get emergency procurement, where for emergency procurement there's very specific provision made, and it's actually very easy in the sense that the practice note says that in the case of emergency procurement, you just need to get the approval from the accounting officer, and that person must just state, this is an emergency, and therefore we don't have to follow the normal processes. So if it was a real emergency and the approval wasn't obtained of the accounting officer, let's say the geyser burst now while you were having the meeting, so someone quickly runs out and phones to get the plumber around the corner to come and fix it for us. In that case, you would not have had the approval of the accounting officer. But the accounting officer can then afterwards apply his mind and determine, yes, it was indeed an emergency, and therefore he can contact you. That specific one is allowed because the supply chain management framework and practice notes allows for the accounting officer to give that approval. The accounting officer can condone such cases. But other cases needs to go back to National Treasury, for instance. If you had to obtain three quotations, if you had to go out on tender and you didn't go out on tender, if you didn't follow the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, if you contracted with a supplier, there's a requirement that you cannot do business with a supplier if the value is over 30,000 rands unless that supplier can provide you with a tax clearance certificate. So if you did do business with a supplier for more than 30,000 rands and you did not have a valid tax clearance certificate at hand when you contracted with the supplier, that's irregular expenditure. That the accounting officer cannot condone, and you must go back to National Treasury for condonement. So that's the difference. Now, let's say, for instance, it was a case where there was no tax clearance certificate. You know, that will most probably be a case where you still receive value. I don't think there's a question in most cases whether you receive value. It's a technical issue that you did not ensure that you had a tax clearance certificate. So in that case, there would be no need for any bigger investigation in a case like that. But then you need to determine. The supply chain management policy clearly determined that you should have obtained a tax clearance certificate. Did the person not know of the requirement, or was he negligent? That's the determination that should then be made. And then the entity must then consider, in a case where value was received, how far should you go, you know, in dealing with that matter? Should you just reprimand the official, or do you believe that you should go in? That's the process that should be applied for each and every irregular expenditure. The Honourable Member discuss those key control documents with the CFOs and the CEOs, and even with the chairperson of the board. So they know what those key controls are, and we are advising them to use that as a management tool to ensure that those reconciliations are done on a monthly basis. So hopefully when we come back with the audit, they would have used that tool to ensure that those key controls are in place. What we also do is on a quarterly basis, we give feedback to them on whether we believe that control is there or not. But it's not an audit in itself. We just go and do a few basic tests. And it relies a lot on the integrity of the officials. If the CFO says, yes, I do the reconciliation and here it is, we will just quickly look if it's there. We will not audit the reconciliation in detail. So the idea is just to give high-level feedback on whether the key controls are there on a month-to-month basis. So we are hoping that that mechanism would help, that when we do come around for the final audit, that those controls are actually in place. And then internal audit. You cannot underestimate the role of internal audit, because internal audit should be there nearly every day, and they should also be checking those controls, and they should go even deeper than we do for our quarterly visits. They should actually go and test that reconciliation when it's actually complete, and they should give that feedback to management. That's why the role of internal audit can never be underestimated. With regard to the improvement in the why we say improvement in the audit opinion, it's purely how we as auditors view the different opinions. A disclaimer is a worse opinion than a qualified opinion. So, and if we look at coming from an environment where there were basically no items on the financial statements that we could sign off and say fairly stated. Moving from that to four items, which we were unsatisfied with, and moving from a disclaimer, there's no information for me to audit and express an opinion, to a situation where there is now information for me to audit, and based on that information provided to me, there's four areas that we are concerned about. That's purely how we view the improvement. If you think back to what I've indicated earlier on, the items that are currently there in the qualification, I believe is items which can be fixed and shouldn't be there again. It's really items which, if the key controls are in place and if internal audit focus on that, and if management and the leadership focus on that, it's all items that I think can be resolved in the 10-11 financial year. Yes, with regard to the legislation, I must be careful because we shouldn't get involved in the legislative part. But I think it's always good to review legislation from time to time. It's legislation, everything moves on and changes, you know, and it's very important that one should review legislation on a continuous basis to make sure that my view on legislation is that, you know, legislation is normally drafted with a specific intention, but you test it in practice once it's implemented, and then one only realizes maybe some of the difficulties in the legislation, or maybe some of the shortcomings of the legislation, or one realizes there's maybe a better way to do it. And therefore, it might be a good thing to consider amendments to the legislation to make it work for the CG. I think consider. Yes, on the irregular expenditure, Honourable Chairperson, it's high at this point in time. I think therefore what is important is to make sure that supply chain management unit is implemented immediately, and that the recommendations of the report of the Auditor General, the investigation report of the Auditor General, and the report of the Public Protector be taken seriously and be implemented as a matter of urgency. The report of the Auditor General on the special investigation has been completed. It has been tabled last Friday, it's my understanding. It's RP 268 of 2010. So you should be able to get copies if you wanted copies of this report. So this report and the Public Protector's report deals with a variety of aspects, and it covers a lot of the irregular expenditure which has been included in the financial statements. It's however possible that there might also be some irregular expenditure that has been identified here that has yet not been included in the financial statements, and that might have to be done now in the 10-11 financial year. But I think it's critical that there's adequate focus on the recommendations made in the audit in these special reports.
National strategic objective. So we do look at the information that feeds from the provinces.
Apartheid, they need a very, very good system for collecting the performance information. It's a very valid point that the Honourable Member has raised. With regard to assistance, I think the Auditor General must be independent, so we cannot go and render assistance to entities. National Treasury focuses on some entities to help them with some kind of assistance, but I think at this stage their focus is mainly at the big departments where they actually assist them to develop turnaround plans and where they also monitor it. A very important mechanism which the entity should also have is and that is something that this committee might want to focus on, is an action plan to address the prior year audit findings, you know, and then regularly monitoring that action plan. In an organization like the CGD, it's important that the key posts are filled by the right skilled personnel. A CFO is a very key position, you know. So it's very important that if they've got the skilled officials in those positions, then there shouldn't be any challenges. But those are the assistance mechanisms that I'm aware of. We are trying through our key controls process to try and get the entities to at least focus on key controls. But unfortunately, because we have to be independent, we cannot render any more assistance other than that. Chairperson, I think with that, I've covered most of the questions.
Okay. Lastly, from my side, I want to know what is the total budget of the CGE, and then what is the total amount in terms of irregular expenditure. And again, in municipalities, there's this thing of deviation. And you spoke about emergencies, you know, that they could spend money in terms of emergencies. Whether the clause of deviation is there, whether they could also exercise the deviation, you know, I think we need to be clarified on that as well. That's fine.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yes, at national level, and specifically which relates to the provisions that relates to a constitutional institution and national departments of public entities, the supply chain management practice note is very clear that the only deviation is in emergency cases or when impractical. So one needs to look very clearly at each and every situation. And National Treasury has requested us to during our audit, specifically focus on that area to make sure that entities do not abuse those provisions. If everything is emergency procurement, so then it's obviously a problem. So we really, in our audits, look at whether it was indeed an emergency or whether it was a matter of bad planning.
Regardless of the amount.
Yeah, but also I think even if there were cases like that, the fact is, in terms of the law, they are supposed to report that to Treasury, which they did not do.
Your Honourable Chairperson, you're indeed correct. There's a specific requirement, and if my memory serves me correct, my colleague can help me out. I think specifically when it's over R1 million, then it needs to be reported in writing to National Treasury as well. Yeah. The total expenditure, it was $50 million budget for 19, and the irregular expenditure, which just relates to 19, is R6 million. So it's roughly about 12%. Yeah. The irregular expenditure incurred just in the 19 financial year is about 12% of the total budget. The 14 is the accumulation.
You're the chairperson. I'm Cedric with the 14 million.
I think we, 14 million is a closing balance. It includes 8 million which comes from previous years. So if you want to determine for this year, I think it's safer to stick to this year's budget. So this year it was a budget of 50 million, 6 million irregular expenditure, which roughly gives us 12% of the budget, which has been irregular expenditure.
Thank you very much. Members, 12% of 50 million is a lot. I said earlier on that if I had my way, I'll have no mercy. CGE is here, and we still have Kashifa. We need you to also empower us on this. I don't know, maybe we'll have to go and ask them that just 10 minutes, ne? They should give us 10 minutes. Thank you very much. If there's anything that we need clarity on, I hope we'll still have access to your office. But thank you very much for your time. You're excused. Kashifa?
Good morning, members. I just want to check if all of the members have the strategic plan on in front of them. Members, if you take the strategic plan of the CGE and you look at the contents page, you'll look at number 3 that deals with thematic areas. That numbering there is incorrect, but it deals with gender and poverty, gender-based violence, gender democracy, and good governance. It's the content page of the strategic plan. And then gender, culture, and then it's also HIV and AIDS, and then the national gender machinery. Those are the thematic areas, and if you go through them, the strategic plan, you'll see that there are specific goals and targets for each one of those thematic areas. Now, this is very important because if you look at the annual report, the way it reports, now I've totally taken apart my annual report trying to understand how they've reported in this thing, is that they've reported according to specific departments and not according to the thematic areas. So it makes it very difficult to understand what is happening. Because now they'll report on the national, on the gender barometer, and they'll report it on at least 4 or 5 pages. So they're reporting the same thing in 4 or 5 pages, which makes it very difficult to understand. So I've had a tough task, and I've literally, I can show you, I've taken unbound my annual report on China and understand what is happening. Kashima's experience the same thing. Firstly, the numbering, in terms of the overall technical quality of the report, is that the numbering is out. The specific, there are pages missing. They talk to specific schedules or to specific sections, and it does not exist. The numbers that do not correspond with the content page, so
committee, that you know, that is very problematic. Also, as I mentioned, they report on specific departments and exercises done, and that doesn't speak to the strategic plan of the CGD, which deals with the thematic areas. So you can't, it's very difficult to measure the performance, which is what the gentleman from from the Auditor General also said. Then in terms of the analysis that Kashif and I did on page number 3, gender and poverty, I've basically set out a little brief on each one of these programs and what they deal with. In most of those thematic areas, there are one or two objectives, except for one or two of them, which have six objectives. But basically, what the committee needs to understand is with each one of these programs of the thematic areas, the reporting that is done in the annual report doesn't correspond with what is in the strategic plan. If one looks at the first one, which is gender and poverty, that specific program seeks to form a conceptual framework with which to monitor and evaluate government poverty reduction strategies. That was not done. And the annual report, what is reported on in the annual report and what is reported on in the plan does not correspond. They haven't done anything. What they are reporting on does not contained in the strategic plan at all. So that makes it very difficult to monitor the efficacy and the program and the performance of the CGE. And that's what the gentleman from the Auditor General said as well, is that if you have to look at the strategic plan and then the budget as well, because the budget will speak to the programs contained in the strategic plan. This has not happened with the CGE, which makes it very difficult to analyze the programmatic performance of the CGE. I think there's a question.
Thank you.
message is, good morning.
Good morning,
Chair. We do hope you are fine. You are here today to give us your annual report. Can somebody close the door, please? But just to bring you on board, we have listened to the AG's report with regards to the CGE. And one must say, it's not a very good report. It's not a very good report at all. And I'm not discouraging you to present, but I just thought you needed to know that. And also, maybe one needs to say what we are actually expecting. In the main, we are actually wanting you to present your annual report, but mainly we want you to link, or that's what we are expecting as the two committees. We have two committees here, the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee. And so it's members from both houses. We want to hear an annual report that talks to your strategic plan. Or we hope that your report is talking to your strategic plan. We would also want, you know, out of the AG's report, we would also be satisfied to see the difference that came out of your turnaround strategy that you presented to us previously. But I don't want to waste time, and I do hope that you have condensed this document. I do hope you have a summary of it.
Yes, Chair.
You do? Yes. Okay. Who will be making the presentation?
In terms of the... Thanks, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. In terms of the invitation, we are going to start with the financials, and thereafter we'll follow with the performance information as guided by the invitation from the two committees. So we're going to ask our acting financial manager to do the presentation, and then after that, the CEO is going to lead on the performance information.
I'm not sure what the invitation was like, but members, I was going to think that we have it the other way around. So that, we don't start with the financial. Let us start with the programs, then we link the programs to the financial.
Okay. That's fine, Chair. That's how the invitation was. Maybe we thought that.
No, but I don't think it will.
Okay. It's fine. Okay.
It will disturb you in any way. Just do it the other way around.
It's fine. So then I will ask the CEO to present the performance information, and then thereafter we'll follow with the financials, and then the other team members will take questions.
And also, Mr. Shosa, is it the CEO or the acting CEO?
The CEO.
The CEO now?
Yes.
Okay.
We wrote to the two committees to inform them about the appointment of the CEO.
Oh, I must have missed that. Okay. Over to you. Also, can we move with speed? We don't have much time. It's now around 20 past 11. So we would want to have enough time, lest we call you back some other day. So let's try and do it and finish it today. Thank you.
Under review, and the newly
responsible for the commission for the current financial year. As we are all aware, the CGE's main mandate in the main comes from the Constitution, and further it is elaborated in the Commission for Gender Equality Act, and there are also some sections in PEPUDA which further puts some of the obligations upon the Commission when it comes to issues of gender inequality or discrimination, as it were. In order to execute our mandate, we actually have three departments. We've got the research department, we've got the legal department, and we've got the public information and education department, which is supported by the finance department, IT, HR, and communications. I think just to summarize, the main obligations that are placed upon us is for us to monitor, investigate, research, lobby, advise Parliament in the sense of submission on legislation or relevant policy, advise Parliament in terms of compliance to international, regional instruments that South Africa is signatory to. Chairperson, when we got the invitation, it had specific bullets in terms of how our presentation should look like. And we kind of followed that particular process. So before I get into the actual performance of the three departments that elaborated, I'm going to try and respond to some of the bulleted points that were in the invitation. I think the invitation placed it upon us to talk to some of the issues that we've had, challenges, both internally and externally, and we've tried to put but a few, just to get the portfolio committee members or give them a sense of the challenges that we as the commission have been facing. You know, in terms of appointments of commissioners, where we are sitting at this point, in actual fact, honourable members, when you look at the CGE Act, says that for the commission to be looked or seen as a legal entity, there has to be a chairperson plus seven commissioners. And chairperson, where we are sitting now, we only have seven commissioners with the deputy acting. So as far as the Gender for Commissions Act is concerned, we might not even be forming a legal entity. And those are some of the challenges. We've got, there's a number of work that needs to be done. There's oversight and the like, especially from the periods where we are coming from as an institution. And there's a lot of work that needs to be taking place in terms of making sure that commissioners perform their roles as for oversight. And people are stretched. So I think it's one of the things that we've been trying to get the attention from Parliament to say this process needs to be completed so that we can be able to have stability and be able to move as an institution. We've got issues in terms of our structure, Chairperson. If you look into this particular document that is placed before Parliament, there is the specific structure that is placed in there, a structure that is very cumbersome. This is page 15 of the annual report. Our structure is very problematic, and these are some of the things As I talk, I'll also try to link with the turnaround strategy, which we at some point presented before this honorable committee. When you look at the structure, it's a structure that is very cumbersome. It looks like everybody must report to the CEO, and obviously there's something wrong with that. So internally, that is some of the things that we have looked into and have realized that we need to move and make sure that we come with a structure that is more coherent and that helps and will be able to make it easier for everyone within the commission to discharge this mandate that has been placed upon us by the Constitution. In our phase two, Chairperson, of the turnaround strategy, these are some of the things that we are at this current stage or this financial year embarking on. We've got issues in terms of financial resources. We've got a very limited budget, Chair. And for us to be able to discharge our mandate, those are some of the things that we should be looking into. I think when I speak also about financial resources, if you look, for instance, when TePUDA, which also gives us obligations in terms of taking matters of gender discrimination to court, that particular act was never costed. And the burden was just placed upon the commission without a proper resource allocation for that specific work. We've been having issues of human resource capacity. I think it's common cause. We've come before this parliament, this committee before, in terms of issues of vacancies that we had within the commission. For the year under review, we had an acting CEO and acting HODs or senior managers for the department within the commission. And the main issue was for the commission to move to appoint a CEO who will then in turn be able to appoint HODs or senior managers.
Can I just stop you a bit? Can I say, can you just move straight into your programs? You're actually starting on a very wrong note, you know. Just move straight into your programs. And then when we question, I think those are the things that you need to raise that were hindering progress. You get my point? Now, you are immediately starting from the negative side of your presentation. I think you'll understand me.
Yes, thank
you. Let's move straight into your program. According to your plan, thereafter we will get the financial part. Then after, members will have an opportunity to question. It's then when you are going to raise the issues you are raising now. You know, that because of this, this is why we could not do this. But don't start on the negative side then.
Thanks, Chair. It wasn't my intention to start with the negative side. I just kind of got caught up and followed the actual invitation and all the bullets that it had elaborated. I'd mentioned that we've got three key operational departments. We've got the Public Information, Education and Information Department. And this department mainly deals with outreach, going out there, sensitizing people on the mandate of the commission, where in instances where we have cases perhaps that we've litigated upon and there are specific rights that are elaborated for our communities out of those specific cases, then they would go out to sensitize communities about those. How we work within the commission, we work through thematic areas. We've got a theme, gender-based violence, gender and poverty, gender democracy and good governance, gender culture and religion and tradition, gender HIV and AIDS, and what we call NGM, our national gender machinery. what I've put on the presentation are interventions that have taken place per thematic area, looking at the different provincial offices that we have. And when you look at the thematic areas, we have had 8 interventions that we had put as a target for ourselves. And then when you run across the offices in terms of Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Northwestern and Western Cape, it shows the number, per number, in terms of interventions that have taken place. Chairperson, if you look at it, in most of our targets, some of our targets have not been met. If you look at, for instance, gender and poverty, we had wanted 11 interventions or activities to take place. There are some provinces which have been able to meet those particular targets, but there are some provinces which have not been able to meet those targets. And those, the variances or the reasons for the variances will be elaborated or enumerated right at the end of this presentation. So as it goes along, it shows that in total, for all the themes or thematic areas that we have, there have been 302 interventions that have taken place. What we have now, we've tried to show in terms of this particular graph, the targets. This, I think, shows better than the actual table that we've had previously in terms of where there are variances and where are situations where we've been able to actually meet our own targets. Gender-based violence is the one that there's only a variance of 1. Gender and poverty, we had put there a number of activities be able to say we've discharged our mandate for the year, and those tables just enumerate and show instances where we've been, there have been variances in terms of the targets that we've put for ourselves. The blue is the target, and then the purple is the actual performance that took place, and then the yellow is the variance. Having said that, Chairperson, it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't have specific highlights that we can talk to as the Commission. There are a number of big projects that we had put to embark on, and we've got a number of courts that have been put in place. So in the slides to follow, I'm just going to take through the members some of those projects that we had put for ourselves and to say how far we are and if we have actually met those ones. For 2009, we had wanted to have a media dialogue. This is just a dialogue that looks into issues of gender in the media. When we, as the Commission, look at the media, there are not enough women who participate in the media, and in this particular workshop we've had to put together some of the stakeholders within the media to come and have a seminar and look into issues of why we are not seeing more women in this particular media. That has taken place, and there's a particular report. We embarked on that process with Media MDDA, Media Diversity Development Agency, and we also partnered with the South African Human Rights Commission and the SABC on that particular activity. Chairperson, when you look at our Act, As the commission, there's a particular mandate that we haven't been embarking on at all since incorporation. Our act is very clear in terms of saying the commission is obligated to look at compliance as far as international instruments or treaties that South Africa is signatory to. How far, whether we are meeting the commitments that we made. And that particular front, for a while, we had not been working on it. And the starting point for us was to get all our officers and try and make sure that we train them on issues of, on all the international instruments that we have, like your CEDO, your Beijing, and the like. And we were able to actually put together those and train them so that we can embark on those specific projects as highlighted. We've had a number of interventions like Okutwala, which was spearheaded by our Eastern Cape office. We have come, I think, before this committee to share some of the findings and some of the issues in that in those particular processes. During 16 days of activism, we had interventions that focused on the impact that GBV has on HIV, as well as issues on rape, sexual assault incidents. We have had to put main forums together to try and look into those issues, and we were able to do and meet our targets in terms of those particular activities. We had put ourselves some of the activities under harmful and cultural practices to be able to highlight specific areas where we can look into where this particular issue is arising and come up with dialogues that speak to issues of virginity, ukutwala, virginity testing, ukutwala, and male initiations and the like. And those were able to meet in our KZN office. We already also spearheaded a particular project, the Maternity Benefits Project. This is a project that looks at self-employed women. The difficulty with self-employed women when it comes to maternity benefits is that because they are self-employed, it's difficult for them when they are on maternity leave to go and claim from the UIF, for instance. So those are some of the things, and we wanted to have more issues coming out from the groups that were that are actually affected by this matter. I've mentioned, Chairperson, the Media and Communications Department. It's a department that is being overseen by PEI, which is why it follows directly the PEI. Its main work is to support line departments in terms of making sure that reports and the pamphlets that we have are being printed. But also, it also supports our outreach programs in the sense that it deals specifically with media coverages and or interventions, whether it being print media, radio, and we've had 40 interventions for the past financial year, and it looked at a number of issues as enumerated below, like our mandate, the sex work, human trafficking issues, and the maternity benefits. And these are done through national and community-based radio stations. We've got the legal department, which deals mainly with litigation. It's got a side that deals with parliamentary and liaison, which deals specifically with submissions on legislations that come before Parliament. And we also get complaints from the public. For this past year, we've got some highlights in terms of some of the complaints that we dealt with. We have been getting, after we were involved with the Shulubani case, which we won in the Constitutional Court in the previous financial year, we've been
been having a number of complaints that are linked to chieftainship in, as far as women succession is concerned. We've had the SAOFA matter, which is the South African Women's Football Association, which was dealing with issues of funding when it comes to male or our football, our Bafana Bafana and our Banyana Banyana kind of scenario, that more money is being channeled to male football, like Bafana Bafana, and when you look at the funds that are being put, say, for females, it's less, and those are some of the issues that we were looking into. We have got an estate matter in which we were looking at issues of recognition of customary marriages act and intersection, interstate succession. We've done monitored 16 cases throughout the country, and we've been working on making submissions to public hearings, 10 public hearings that were organized by Parliament, which were dealing with the traditional court bill. For the parliamentary liaison side, we've had 12 submissions for the past financial year, and we were making submissions, for instance, on the Domestic Violence Act, customary marriages, human trafficking, etc. This is just a graph to show how we have done as legal department throughout the three financial years. In terms of cases that we receive, we've got specific cases enumerated or types that have been enumerated, and we were trying to just make trends to show how we have done as a department or as an organization when it comes to issues of complaints for the past three financial years. We have our research department. In our research department, we had a number of activities that we had planned for ourselves. We had wanted to be able to at least complete 5 research reports, and those have been completed, and some of those have actually been shared with Parliament. We've had our land study report. We've got the gender barometer. We've got elections and monitoring dialogue reports. In the past, in that financial year, that's when elections were taking place, and we had gone out to actually monitor the elections process, and we came up with a particular report for that, which was shared with IEC, which have been also lodged with Parliament. So on this slide, it's just in a nutshell a number of interventions that we've also embarked on. We've got the Beijing report that has been finished. We've got the CEDAW report, the CSW seminar report. So those are mostly the highlights that we have had as an organization from the research side. Chairperson, if I'm allowed, I'm not too sure whether I should stop there, because most of the issues that now I'm going to deal with are mostly operational issues, which would have been issues that have one, issues of the variances, the reasons for the variances, and now maybe back into touching on the internal and the external challenges that we've had. I'm not too sure whether Chairperson would want me to stop there so that we get maybe questions from the actual performance before we get into the issues that we've enumerated on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Member
what would you suggest? I would suggest that straight from here, we move on to the financials. Perhaps you could then come back to the... What is your view? You agree on that question? Could we then move on to the financial? If time allows us, we will then come back to that. Then make sense. The financials, you want to link them to your actual programs.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good day. My name is Moshari Putu, the acting CFO. In this presentation, I'm going to try and summarize what's contained in the blue book. The annual report for the Commission for the year 2009-2010. The most part of information pertaining to financial management and financial performance is contained from page 82 of the annual report. As well, for this particular presentation, we have been given guidelines from the invitation letter from the portfolio committee. Some of the guidelines indicated that we need to talk to our reporting standards. I've just enlisted the standards that we follow, the framework, our reporting framework, which is basically GRAP. It's an acronym. I've given the full name. It's Generally Recognized Accounting Practices. In preparation of the annual financial statements as well, we followed the GAAP. We followed the International Financial Reporting Standards. And we also have our own national in-house regulations, as well including our own CGE policies and procedures. There have also been a request to talk to the appropriation. In the slide, I'm indicating appropriation, the funding that we got through the national coffers. Since the year 2007-2008, and I'm also indicating the growth in the allocation coming from National Treasury. As you can see, we have had one generous allocation in 2009 following the baseline being 207.08, 16% growth in allocation. However, subsequent to that, the allocations have been flat 6%, and we are also projecting through the MTF process a growth of 6%, which is almost equal to the inflation rate or targeted inflation rate, thereby implying that in real terms there isn't additional funding to the CGE. Going into the annual financial statement, around page 100, in actual fact, page 98, we have a statement of financial performance, which is traditionally known as an income statement. In that statement, you can see that our income revenue for the period amounted to 49 million. The large part of that amount has been allocated by National Treasury, and we've got a very insignificant contribution of income by other activities like interest earned on a positive bank balance. Those other income, sundry income, amounts to around 15,000. Our expenditure for the period as well stood at 51 million, which is in excess of what has been allocated. And that also compares to what we have restated for the preceding financial year, we in essence have dropped on spending, although still above budget. And this has resulted in the Commission reporting a deficit for the current year of 2.5 million compared to a restated deficit for the preceding year of 10.7 million. That's the bottom line on the statement of financial performance. Generally, the nature and structure of the CG is such that work is being done by our own resources, our professionals, professional officers, lawyers, educationists, researchers, and they form part of the staff establishment, and they draw salaries from what has been allocated by National Treasury. So it goes without saying that salaries consistent with how we deliver our mandate would be a key driver of our spending. So if you look into the statement of financial position, you will see that of the 51 million that has been spent, 31 million was spent on staff costs. And there are also other key cost drivers like depreciation, the wear and tear of our fixed assets as we use them. They depreciate, and that creates an expenditure into the statement of financial performance. In essence, depreciation would be the primary reason for the Commission to report a deficit in this reporting period. This slide makes comparison to between what has been granted as income from National Treasury and what has been spent through the three-year period. These are actual numbers. As you can see, our budget yes indeed grew between 07-08 and 08-09 by 16% from 39,745 million, that is 39.7 million, to 46 million in 2009. The growth is of 16%, and subsequently, consistent with the earlier slide, the growth has been 6% in the current reporting period. And that contrasted with what we have spent, indications are also that, you know, in the preceding financial year, the House would know that there has been a sudden jump of expenditure. I think matters dealing with this spending have been put before this committee before. There was quite a number of activities that have been funded in that year. And coming to the new financial year, we can see that the Commission, although we're still spending above, because there have been other commitments that have been flowing from the preceding year, which have resulted in increased expenditure in the current reporting period. But one can appreciably see that between the two financial years, expenditure has dropped. This was a conscious management decision to curtail on spending to bring back spending according to what has been allocated according to the requirements of the PFMA. So those efforts has indicated a substantial improvement in that expenditure dropped by 9% between the two financial years. We're now going to go to the next page, which is page 99 of the annual report, now dealing with the statement of financial position, traditionally called the balance sheet. if we look into the balance sheet, we will see the bottom line, that for the current year, the total net assets is negative, a negative of 2 million, compared to a positive balance in 2008-09 financial year. Total net asset, when it's in a negative, it implies that the commission has got more liabilities than assets. So should the commission, technically speaking, should the commission stop to operate, we will run short of an estimate of 2 million for us to save it, to service the liabilities that we have recorded, to pay creditors, everybody that we have recorded to say we owe them money. So that is the problem. That is the problem that the commission now faces. However, reading the document as well, we've got note 23, which is a note to the annual financial statements. It's note 24, I'm sorry. Note 24, we're talking about the going concern, because the basis, it's on page number 129, note 24. Going concern. In my earlier slide, I've indicated that we follow specific conventions, standards relating to accounting. So our preparation for this annual financial statement was also on the basis of a going concern, to say that the CGE, we prepare this, we report this, with an understanding that the CGE would continue business going into the future. So the statement of financial position, when it indicates negative net assets, that we have more liabilities than we have assets, questions this basis. So management has sought to reply to this concern. If you may allow me to read this note, it reads as such: the commission incurred an operating deficit of 2.5 million in bracket compared to the preceding year, a deficit of 10.7 million. The commission's current liabilities exceeded its total assets by the 2 million, consistent with the balance that I've indicated on the statement of financial position. However, from management side, we are saying notwithstanding this matters, the commission's ability to continue as a going concern is supported by guaranteed cash inflows from National Treasury. From where we're sitting, we take the Constitution to be supreme law, and our existence is definitely guaranteed, and funding would be guaranteed. So in essence, we are saying we will continue operating. Management is also in a position to, going forward, making good, improving on the balance sheet. And this can only be done by, you know, avoiding future deficits, for working towards registering surpluses, or alternatively, getting increased funding. I've also given some notes basically analyzing the balance sheet, the statement of financial position, to say although the situation on net assets has weakened between the two periods, there are positives. When one looks into our current liabilities compared to current assets, you will see that the position was even much weaker in the preceding year.
You know, I'm looking at the time. We will have exactly 1 hour from now to finish our business. Can you try and move up at speed, please?
Thank you, Chair. The bullet points that I have are basically anecdotal to to the whole story that I presented around the statement. As well, from the invite, we were requested to talk around the statement of net changes in assets. I think it intertwines with the position that I've presented on the balance sheet. I'm also making note to the fact that when preparing the specific annual financial statements, we have had, given the fact that the CGT was coming from an audit opinion that disclaimed the reported balances of the preceding year, we had to go back and do corrections. There have been quite a number of areas that we identified and corrected retrospectively. And those areas are indicated in the table below. It's a summary. There's a full note in the AFS, note number 16, also forming part of the annual financial statements. I think the notes are following each other by number. So there's note 16 that gives the details pertaining to what we have corrected going backwards. All in all, the corrections that were made and affecting the profit and losses of the institution came to 5.3 or 5.4 million in the negative. Statement of cash flow, we should be on page 101. Effectively, for the reporting period shows that we began the new financial year with 271,000. I beg your pardon, the K, it's a shorthand for 1,000 kilo. So we began the financial year with cash resources of 271,000. If you look on page 101 under column 209 right at the bottom, you will see that that's the balance that we closed with in the preceding financial year. And what has happened in the current financial year, or the year under which we are reporting, there have been cash injections from the National Treasury coffers of 49 million. And going down the cash flow statement, you'll see that how we have used that money. We have used that money for the payment of employee salaries and also paying for goods and services provided by various other suppliers. And some of the money has been, very little money has been used to expand our capital resources, our fixed assets. We have spent 33,000 rand in acquisition of our fixed assets. And in addition, we have also used up 286,733 to service our lease obligations. So in essence, the last line on that statement, the 1.6 indicate the cash resources that we were having in the bank account as at the end. Audit overview, it was also requested from the invitation. We have had our audit concluded on the 18th of August. I think much of the details have been provided by the AG through the report, through that presentation of this morning. In essence, the outcome of the audit process was negative, but not as negative as the preceding year. When we presented our turnaround strategy to the committee, we have also made commitments to the fact that moving from the two disclaimed audit opinions by the AG for the year 2007-08 and 08-09, we commit as an institution to turn around that situation. And in our timelines, we've indicated that within the financial year under which we are reporting, we will move audit opinion from that of a disclaimer to a qualification. We knew exactly that there are many problems that we couldn't resolve overnight, and because of those weaknesses, it would be almost impossible to come or to even commit to a clean audit report. It is, however, our endeavor and working very hard as management to ensure that the next coming audit opinion expresses a clean bill of health. In this particular audit report, the problem areas, qualification points identified by the AG were on staff costs, on leave provision, irregular expenditure, contingent liabilities. As well, I think the AG embarked on activities to look into our financial, to our performance information, and then we've been given some comments in the management letter. And those comments and recommendations management is working on to ensure that we comply and then we also meet the required standards. Financial management generally has been weak as an institution, and challenges that informs that weakness has always been, we have reported before that we have capacity challenges, we have competency challenges, especially within the key financial department. Reports have been, even the audit, the AG's report indicates the inadequate internal control systems, history of non-compliance also contribute, you know, it talks to the culture as well. And as well, I think when an institution starts receiving negative audits, that could have a bearing, a direct bearing on the morale. It will create many big problems. However, there are milestones, as I've also indicated in the preceding slide, there are milestones, things that we have achieved, one of which would be testimony is the AG's report for the preceding year, or for the year under which we tabled the report on. We managed to deal with quite a number of backlog issues, you know, relating to accounting, record keeping. Chief amongst those key milestones would be the administration and reporting on fixed assets. I think this part has also contributed immensely to the negative audit findings in the previous financial years. And staffing arrangements, I think with limited budget, within the institution, we could reprioritize and identify the, you know, critical positions, especially in finance, and then there have been additional resources allocated to help us deal with the first challenge that we have indicated. And most of the things that we need to do, the things that we are currently doing, are elaborated more in the turnaround strategy. We
can be round off.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, we're looking forward to getting financial management to be a strategic function within the institution, and it will deal basically with all the highlighted problems. And as I've indicated, most of the things are contained in the turnaround strategy, and there are activities that have been highlighted that we're going to be following through. And thank you, Chair.
Members, thank you very much. We will then give an opportunity to honorable members to question, raise their concerns, and so forth. But can I just have a bite of the first question? I'm
not going to take much. I'll just ask one or two so that all members can have a fair share. Could you just briefly indicate as to, out of the total budget of 50 million, how much was irregular expenditure in terms of percentage? And also, could you review, because I think the last time when you came to us, we did indicate that you need to put in place a balanced scorecard so that you are able to measure your performance. So that is the second question. How does the CGE measure their performance? So we are not going to be selfish. Let us. Can I have let us take all the hands for the first round, and then maybe we'll have second round or third round. Don't think we have much time. Can I have the Honourable Mohoro, the Honourable Member next to him, the Honourable Robinson, the Honourable Hope Malchas, the Honourable Dorothy, Honourable Duncan for the last time. But also, could I first briefly give the chair? Nothing? Okay. In that fashion. Okay, we'll have it in that fashion. It's Mohoro, the Honourable Member next to him, Honourable Robinson, Honourable Hope, Honourable Dorothy, Honourable Duncan, Honourable Kiki, Honourable Kikai.
Thank you, Chair.
Let's try and be very brief and straight to the point.
I'm going to be brief, but there are a number of... I'm going to try to be brief, Chair, but there are a number of questions that one would like to be... I say I'm going to try to be brief, but there are quite a number of questions that I would like
to
ask, but I'm not going to ask them all.
You don't ask them all so you can give other members. I see they are very anxious to have their advice as well.
The questions will go to the first presenter. I think we're going to just put the question, they will divide themselves. First of all, I would like to know, what is PEPUDA? What is PEPUDA? Some new term to me or name to me. Yeah. And then I would like to know from the first presenter if there is any internal mechanisms. And the other question would be, how can the commission run, from what I've heard from the report, how can the commission run without the chairperson? The other question is, ukuthwala, is it a cultural issue or just a question of misbehavior? And if it's a cultural issue, is there any way that it can be modified? In the auditor's report, we were told about a 40 million rand that still has to be condoned. One would like to know, how did the CGE come to that figure of 14 million rand, which still has to be condoned? And then the question of liability of 2 million.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for that. I'd like to thank the CEO and the CFO for their inputs here. The Auditor General said there is an action plan, or there should be an action plan on the report of the Auditor General's comments, because without that, the department or the CGE can go nowhere. So I take it we're halfway through the year. You've got a hot internal audit department going. Supply chain management is all in place. These are all financial admin things. Contracts are all signed. There are no contingent liabilities or it's over. That must be in place. If you could just assure us that all those things are in place. And one thing that was very important that the Auditor General said there was a shortage of skills in the department. That's not easy. You've got to advertise that. How are you going to get those skills in, or where they come from, training, I don't know, but that was a very important aspect. And the other thing, the second leg of it, is the actual action plan and outcomes and strategic plan for the department. They don't agree. They don't speak to one another. We don't see any. We'd like more detailed report back from the provinces, what they are each doing. We don't see the financial implications all rolled into the main report. We don't have specific court cases where you're challenging court cases. We want to see more specific outcomes based on your strategy and what you should be, what your the CG is all about. Thank you.
Chaturanga, the court cases, we would want to see as to how many court cases were lodged. Out of that, how many have been successful? You know, things like that, so that we can be clarified.
Thank you, Chair. Based on page 8 of the PowerPoint presentation, CGE spent $47.5 million on employees and suppliers. This amounts to 96.7% of their total budget. Now you're still short-staffed. If we've already spent more than we've got, how are we going to go forward? What have you actually spent on implementing programs? That's what impresses me, not blustering. I want to hear what you have done that is making a difference in the lives of ordinary people. Then on page 129, you made some comments about this being a going concern. What you said afterwards slightly eased me, but I can tell you I was extremely hot under the collar when I heard what you said. You said that you are a going concern. You are guaranteed of this by virtue of the fact that you get money from the Treasury and that you've got the entrenchment of the existence of the Commission under Section 181. Now, I think that's the wrong attitude. What makes you a going concern is how you manage your money, and you are clearly not managing your money. It doesn't just, the fact that you exist doesn't allow you to continue to exist if we are not getting proper management. What is happening, as my colleague said, about supply chain management? What about these irregular expenditures? That is what makes you a going financial concern. Yes, on the moral high ground, you can stand, but in no other way. So we mustn't assume that you are here guaranteed and you can sit back and be comfortable. When we are so short of money... Sorry, just one point, Madam Chair. I'll just finish quickly. I noticed that you spent an inordinate amount, I think it was 40,000 on Bafana jerseys. Now, can you please tell me how does 40,000 rand spent on Bafana jerseys assist us with gender issues? I think we need to look at how we spend our money. I think people who earn salaries can buy their own jerseys, quite frankly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think quite a number of my questions were asked. Because I was also interested in the improvement plan when it comes to this audit report. But what I'd like to speak to is your deficit that you're speaking about. I think it's important for you to explain it to us again, that you can understand it. Because when it comes to deficit, it could be regarded as an over expenditure too. You're overspending your budget. And then what I want to know is, if you overspend, because you see there were two overspendings, the 10 million and the 2. That is an overdraft to me. In layman's terms, it's an overdraft to me. And how are you servicing that? Because I think it's important to explain this deficit. Then on page 91, when it comes to this material losses through criminal conduct and impairment, I think more should be explained to us on this. Because they speak about criminal conduct. Then what are we doing if there was criminal conduct? You know, things like that. It's only that I would like to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also going to be very short. Most of the questions have been asked already. But I thought I should actually bring this.
idea of having, you know, a straight plan? I'm talking to the straight plan and the budget, which are actually the tools that enables us to achieve, you know, our goals. And I just want to find out from the CGE as to whether were they aware, you know, that they are not linking what they are doing to the plan, and whether they were aware of the implications that would be there, because it also makes it difficult for the auditors, you know, to audit. And I think it would also have made the auditors work easier to audit had they linked that. And it also assists you not to over budget, because you are using your, you know, your line functions. Yeah, I think that's what I wanted to raise. But also thank you for your presentation.
Well, Duncan. I thought members were also going to ask that in a situation where there is irregular expenditure, the law is very clear on what should be done. That should be reported to the National Treasury. Were these irregular expenditures reported to Treasury? If yes, you'll explain how you did it. If not, why were they not reported? We'll have another bite again. Thank you.
Through the chairperson, they mustn't just explain. They should be in writing, because we have to see a letter when these things are done. Thank you. I say they mustn't just give us an answer to it, because normally when anything takes place, you write to Treasury to request or report. So those things that these transactions, whatever took place, should be in writing, so that bring the written thing afterwards to us.
In other words, you should have such proof. Ubufakazi imfana zethu ukuthi ngempela le nto nayenza enzulu. Awushakho ukuthe enzulu.
Maybe before you respond, I don't know if I've captured this correctly. On your presentation, I'm sorry I missed your name as well, the second presenter. You said if you were to close shop, you need 2 million to pay off your outstanding debt. I don't know if I heard you correctly.
Thank you. My name is Moshadi Butu.
You don't have to just explain whether, because I also understood you to be saying that sort of you are living from hand to mouth right now.
In technical terms, when you have more liabilities than you have assets, it means should you be required to pay your liabilities at this moment, the only source of you being able to service that debt should be from your assets. So effectively, it's technical to say that should we close shop and having no other alternative source of income, when we sell our assets as fair valued, we're not going to have sufficient money to service or to pay all our creditors. So it's a technical explanation, basically.
So you were saying you need 2 million to settle, or you were saying the value of your assets is 2 million and which is not sufficient enough to cover? I don't know. I misunderstood what you said.
What I'm saying is that our assets are less than our liabilities by 2 million.
Yes, Honourable Hope?
Question. I think that you'll be better back. I have to still ask questions. But just on that question, I made it clear, explain. Because if it's to me a deficit, you call it a deficit, you are going to have liabilities you have to pay. If there's 2 million or on your amount, that 15 million that you received. To me, that is over expenditure. And to me, you know, it's an overdraft within the bank. So explain, because we must know, if you have an overdraft, how are you servicing it?
I think let us do that this way. That was actually the last question within this round. Let us start from the beginning on the issue of the 50 million budget. Out of that, how much in percentage terms, how much is irregular spending? Let's start there. Sorry. Oh, Honorable Kiki and Honorable Kukan, I'm very sorry about that. Sorry? But I did recognize you. I'm sorry about that. I did recognize you. Please don't take it back. You can now talk.
Thank you, Chair. On page 9, of the report, it said the chairperson of the committee also resigned in March, and a process of recruiting a suitable candidate was unfolding. I'm a bit confused. Who's supposed to appoint the suitable candidate? Is it the commissioners themselves, or is not supposed to be appointed by the president coming through parliament processes? But if the process now is unfolding, I need clarity on that particular issue. And the second issue that I need to raise is covered by Honorable Robertson on the issue of the 40,000 for the Bafana Bafana jerseys with the limited budget you have. I think clarity is needed on that particular issue as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The question of court cases has been covered about that, but I want to know in the test document on the service delivery performance, don't know what page, if the CGE has met the target. If they are underperforming, why? I wanted to know about that because I see that there's 8 Eastern Cape and so on and so on. I want to know if they have reached their targets whilst they were doing their performance. Thank you.
CGE, please be brief when you answer your question. I'm sure we would want to have a second round.
Well, thanks, sir. I'll ask all of us who are going to partake in the answering of questions. I will ask the CFO to actually answer the 50 million. And so I think all of us were numbering the questions. And then there's question one from the chair and question two. More especially from the budget side.
Thank you, Chair. The reconciliation pertaining to irregular spending is on page 127 of the report. Effectively, if you look into that reconciliation, you'll see that for the year under the year in which we report, irregular expenditure amounted to 5.9 million. That, as a percentage of a 50 million budget, would translate into about 12%. 12%.
How does CGE measure its performance? We acknowledge as CGE that Trusted Plan did not have clear targets, and that's why we have actually embarked on a situation where we're actually reviewing our strategic plan, and have even invited the two committees to come and actually participate in that process. But in actually measuring our work, we have different committees in the commission. One we have plenary of commissioners where we sit and actually interrogate management in terms of performance. We also have thematic committees that actually oversee the work of the commission. And now we are finalizing the tool that is going to actually assisting us actually measure our performance. But those committees, thematic committees, oversee the work of the commission as well as plenary of commissioners. And on a quarterly basis, we have reports that managers submit to commissioners, and we interrogate that. And in terms of that, and that is also escalated into an annual, into a quarterly performance management system. So that's what we do in terms of, and we also have a monitoring and evaluation committee at the commission where we sit and actually look at the work that we do and actually interrogate management in terms of that. For example, there's a finance committee, there's an IT committee, there's an human resources committee as well. But now what we're actually doing as well, what we've started to do as commissioners is to actually look at the AG report and actually ask questions and that is going to actually speak specifically to the issues that have been raised by the AG. For example, the action plan that the AG was talking about. We're worried because when they are here, because we have had a meeting with them to actually finalize the action plans in relation to what they've actually raised in this AG report. So the action plan is still going to actually meet with them to actually finalize that. So in terms of that, that's how we actually measure our work, Chairperson. Then I will give Commissioner Kotswani to answer about Phephuda.
Thank you, Chairperson. PEPUDA is an acronym that is used to an abbreviation of the act, which is called the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination. There's an act of parliament that was passed in 2000, and the CG has part of it that we have to implement from our side as well. So it's just an acronym meaning that act on the promotion of equality and prevention of unfair discrimination.
Let me come to the issue of Ukuthwala as well. Some people, they say it is a cultural issue, but the CGE we see it is a criminal issue. And I think that's where we actually draw the line. We interact with communities, they see it as a cultural issue, but from the CGE position, it's a criminal issue.
In fact, I think we share the same view as a committee.
$14 million irregular expenditure, I would like the CFO to check that and refer to the annual report as well.
Thank you, Chair. The reconciliation, as I've indicated earlier, on irregular expenditure is on page 127 of the annual report at the bottom. The $14 million, basically, it's accumulated balance. 8.9 coming from the preceding year, adding the 6 million or so in the current year. Yes, indeed, the procedure to get this regularized has got to be done in writing to National Treasury, giving explanations and also indicating actions that have been taken. There's also for the current year, on page 130 of the same document, these specific instances of spending irregularly have been enlisted. The primary reasons are also indicated. I think the law is strict. The law needs to be followed to the latter. Instances or the causes of this spending irregularly are more administrative in nature. I think we have considered basically as the institution that we need to change ourselves, we need to upskill people who have got to be dealing with contract management, supply chain management, and we are, as we speak, working very hard. The appointments of competent people are on course. We have advertised, we are interviewing in the coming week. We have specified specifically according to the AG's finding that we lack skills. We have identified where we've got skills gap and began the process of recruiting. So we are at the tail end of that recruitment process, and our recruitment basically is squarely designed to address and avoid the recurrence of similar situations, because it's all about including simple things, including filing, because there might have been a contract, but document management might have been weak. And also there have been quite a number of staff turnover within the institution, so also the institutional memory is lost. So these are basic things that we are addressing, and I can safely say, apart from what has been reported in the audit report regarding criminality in terms of some receivables and money spent irregularly, there isn't any instance of fraudulent procurement in this amount of 14.8 million, as reported here. It's matters of administrative nature, lack of contract, and whatever. I think we are addressing this as an institution.
Ms. Abrams wants to add on to the irregular expenditure.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just want to add, if you turn to page 127 of the annual report, you will see that the vast majority of irregular expenditure took place during the previous financial year. And that is, as you well know, has been fully subject to forensic audit and an OPP report. Our problem is of a technical nature, that the Auditor General carries this over and will continue to, it will reoccur every year until Treasury condones it. But in that sense, it's completely beyond our control. It was issues that were the bulk of it, almost two-thirds of it incurred during 2008-2009. With respect to the 5 million that's remaining under this financial year, you will see that over 1.2 million is simply unforeseen legal expenditures that by definition is considered irregular because they were not budgeted for. And I can break that down further for you, but again, these were matters that were incurred under the chairship of our previous chair, and there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. The remaining almost 4 million, as our CFO has explained, it referred to things like travel agents or shuttle services, which were services that we incurred on a case-by-case basis. And what the Auditor General has said to us simply is that we need to put those through supply chain management procedures. In other words, we require one supplier that has to go out to tender, and despite the fact that we don't know, we cannot tell you now, for instance, how much shuttle services we're going to require in a particular month. Despite that, those services need to be contracted. That's why they're classified as irregular. I know it looks bad, almost 4 million, but the fact of the matter is absolutely no fraud. It hasn't benefited any particular person. It's a technical process. I just wanted to add that, Chair, because I think it clarifies why we're not able to go from a disclaimer to a clean audit in 1 year, because of the technical nature of the Auditor General's approach, which is these things continue to carry over until we can condone it. It's going to take us 2 years to move to a completely clean audit. Thank you.
Chair, there was another question about...
Can you hold it?
A question about the...
Can you hold it a bit? Is it a question? Sorry? A follow-up. Okay.
Carried on or carried over. They alluded to contingencies and that certain cases might be carried on. I'm just quizzy to know on the page 129 of the Auditor General's report under contingencies, there was a certain case for 814,000 or set down for August on some contract that was arbitrarily cancelled or whatever. What happened there? Could you just inform us, enlighten us? Has that been now settled?
Did you get the follow up?
Yes, we did. The absolute matter, the members want to know about what is happening, how far are we with that, and so on.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. That's a matter that pertains to one of the contracts which we realized that was not entered into following procedures, and then we cancelled that contract, and the service provider thereon was taking us to court to the amount for the remaining time for that particular contract for the 8-14. The matter, yes, was set in court in the 30th of August this year, and that matter has been postponed. So we are still engaged in litigation on that particular matter.
There was a question, Chair, on the issue of cases. You can see I'm consulting with managers here as well. The members wanted us to give us a breakdown of cases that we deal with in provinces and the status of that. I've not consulted with the commissioners for legal, but I've consulted the HOD. That information, we are putting our heads on the block that we are going to actually send that information to the committee, where we'll be actually giving a brief on each and every cases on each and every province, because we're monitoring on each and every province, and then that information is going to be communicated to the two committees via the two chairpersons.
Very dangerous to put your head on the block. Once, if you don't bring that information, we are cutting the head.
Issue of the 47 million that are spending our monies on salaries as opposed to service delivery. But before I let the managers respond to that, SCGE will rely more on employees to do our work. I'm going to make an example here. For example, we have moved towards, as a commission, we're utilizing our staff members, not contracts now, to do our work. If you look at all the reports submitted in Parliament, almost all of them have been combined by the CGE staff, which means as much as we pay them the salaries, but they also continue to do the service for the Commission for Gender Equality. So if we were a private organization, we were going to have a plan where time in and time out we are going to actually allocate to say from 9 o'clock to this, that's what we did in terms of this. It means that they are our service providers for us in terms of actually doing work in the provinces and so on. Cases, for example, when people come into the CGE to report cases, CGE staff members, they're the ones who do that. Doing research, they're the ones who do that. Doing educational workshops in provinces, they're the ones who do that. So that's why the bulk of money goes to salaries, because they're the ones who are actually doing the work. Even including the annual report that you see in front of you, it was written by the people sitting in front of you. It was never commissioned out of the Commission for Gender Equality. So that's why we see that maybe with that report, we are actually challenging them to actually use to do the Commission for Gender Equality work. But I'll ask the CEO and the CFO as well to expand more on this.
We have about 15 minutes, and I think we wanted to use that 15 minutes. You are going to briefly, each member of the CGE that is here must tell us in 2 minutes or 1 minute, how closer are you to moving towards an unqualified opinion? All of you that are here.
Thank you, Chair. The last question around how much of the budget is spent on programs. In the annual report, page 85, we are indicating in that table that for the year 2009-10, we have spent 20.9 million of the 51 million reported as expenditure.
Chairperson, a point of order, please. Chairperson, with all the respect to the chair, I feel very offended as a member of this of this portfolio committee today. I have tried to get your attention. I think I put my hand up because I wanted to know whether before the members are going to, or the CGE is going to get an opportunity to give a 1 minute on what you asked them. I would want to know from you, does that mean that our question time is over? And then also, is it not maybe fair, Chairperson, for us to, together with you, actually, because I don't feel that we should give the members an opportunity to, one person per person, to explain the way forward before we are done, Chairperson.
No. I'm looking at the time, Duncan. I'm looking at the you have a question? Then you can just raise your hand if you have a question. So are you saying we should wait till they're finished, or do you want to make a follow-up?
Chairperson, I would like to ask a question, and then after the question, maybe suggest, because if we look at the AG's report, there's investigations, and I think that we can question them at another session or give them time to give input. But right now, it is maybe more important that we use the time optimally if there's still questions for clarity from our side and so on. So I don't think maybe this is the right time for the CGE members to staff to maybe comment.
Maybe can one say this? There are processes that are going on with regards to the CGE. So one needs to understand how closer you are in correcting whatever, so that one can contribute in whatever you have told us when those processes come. That is the reason I'm saying each one of you should tell us something as to how closer you are with regards to moving to obtaining an unqualified. That's the reason why I'm asking that. But I take Duncan's point. Can you just stop and just answer her question for now?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want the new CEO, to just confirm whether this annual report, relate to the strategic plan of the department, and how this was done, the presentation that was done. How these three actually speak to each other? Because I'll give just one reason. Because in the beginning, when our chairperson stopped our new CEO on reporting, she made mention, and I would like to know who then drawn up this one. She referred to the organigram that they are not so satisfied with. So I'm puzzled. I'm puzzled because again today, Chairperson, we started off with something, we changed to a next thing, and all of this makes it difficult to keep track. So I'm asking, I hope that the CEO got the question. I want to know whether the annual report reflects the track plan, and does the presentation correspond with these two documents? I know that the financial one, however, does with the AG's report that was given, that was presented this morning. Thank you.
I think, in short, just briefly explain whether the report that we have presented talks to the strategic plan. However, I think that was asked before. Maybe you didn't respond to it.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I think that's one of the questions that was asked. And in fact, Honourable Duncan, if you look at the presentation, parts where I did not touch on, there are issues which, as an institution, we've been able to look at. The 2008-2013 strategic plan, I think that's a copy that you have.
We always call it the blue document.
I just don't have a copy now. That is our strategic plan, the copy that we have. Yes. That is the strategic plan that was developed in 2008 that is supposed to be for the period 2008 to 2013. And if you look at this document has got a number of flaws. And I think Chairperson did touch on the fact that we are actually reviewing this document. And part of why we are reviewing this document is when an audit takes place, what we would normally do at the beginning of each financial year is out of this document, we take out a plan for the year. And a plan for the year is summarized, I think, for all departments and for all the thematic areas that are in the strategic plan in page 71, right towards the end of performance information. My presentation is talking to this, with the limitations that it's got, which are, limitations are coming out of this document, which is our strategic plan document. That is in place at this point, which is why, it's a document that is in place, and it's a document that we are saying it's got flaws, and it's a document that we are in the process of reviewing. But this annual report is based on this document for the year. For the record, the annual report speaks to some of the issues that are in here. What we do on a yearly basis is to take a year's plan out of our strategic plan and then work through it.
Follow up? Then I can understand. If this is flawed, then I would like to know how is it possible then for us to really ensure whether, because on what paper, Chairperson, are we actually going to evaluate whether the CGE, together with the turnaround strategy, that tells me the turnaround strategy is not part of this maybe, then the CGE need to make this a priority to ensure that the strat plan is in place. Because this is part of the legislative part that you have to adhere to. I mean, we can't have annual reports and it is based on a flawed strategic plan. So I urge the CGE to put this in place as like in from tomorrow.
Chairperson, can I?
In other words, what if I hear you correct, Duncan? You are saying that if we take what the presenter is saying, you are then saying on what basis are we comparing the document if it has flaws? You understand? Then on what basis are we asking you people that does the strategic plan speaks to the report? On what basis are we asking you? But then I think, just stop there. I think let's give the. You may not get a chance for the time. That's the It's actually 1 o'clock.
Chairperson, may I just ask?
Members, let us agree. Can we then take, it's now 1 o'clock and we are supposed to adjourn. Let us agree on time, even if it's, let's say, let's move out of here at half past one, is that fine? We shouldn't have members moving out before the meeting is closed. Let's first agree on that. Because I do realize that there are still issues that need to be raised.
Chairperson, I'm very sorry. I have another committee meeting, multi-party one, and I have to be with Mr. Mapela. Only thing I wanted to ask is, and I've asked my colleagues to listen carefully, could I just have a very quick answer, I think, they could give me on the Bafana jerseys, because we did interrupt what was happening there. The programs, the other people will listen. I'd just like to personally to hear with my own ears what the point is of spending so much money on jerseys when it's not a gender issue, and how you justify that in the case that has already got so little money.
Can you quickly answer, how does the Bafana jersey, how do we link that to gender equality?
It's true that the jerseys were bought by the CG for staff members to actually encourage them as well, to support the World Cup, to support Bafana Bafana and so on. I think that's where we're really coming as an institution to say the support the country, and whenever we go, and I must also state that was linked to the program that we have as a gender commission. We are going to present before this committee a 2010 committee program, where as a gender commission we have a program, we have a committee that was set up by plenary to look at the 2010 World Cup activities on human trafficking, on educating people about the dangers of World Cup, sex work, and so on. And then we wanted to actually brand that as well and to ensure that was happening. And that this committee is going to get, that report is going to be ready in the next 2-3 weeks, where we'll be actually reporting on the issues that the commission was involved in during the World Cup.
With respect, Chair, that's a long shot. One can use one's brain to work on human trafficking. One doesn't need a jersey. Thank you.
Robinson? Did you get the answer now? You know, these things do happen. It's not that they don't happen, to deviate from your strat plan. But the issue is, there are systems that are in place that you should follow if ever such a situation occurs. Now, one, you did not follow the correct procedure of deviating from your strat plan. It's not that it doesn't happen, it does happen in other departments as well. But then you should have followed the correct procedure, and that is of reporting to the National Treasury, and even brief the committee on the, you know, to say, look, we are now moving away from our strat plan for these reasons. But as the CGE, you did not do that. Okay, let us proceed.
I still wanted to respond to the Honourable Duncan's. Oh, sorry. To the concern around the link between the strategic plan, the annual report, and sorry, what was the third document, the presentation. I just want to say that I'm chair of the Finance Committee, and the job of the Finance Committee is to make sure we spend to budget. And in that capacity, I am entering into a debate with the Auditor General because, you know, although they have concerns that our strategic plan is flawed, and we freely take responsibility for that, we're working on revamping it. We're also expressing to them that the performance management systems that are appropriate to a government department may not be appropriate to the C9, and particularly the insistence on quantifiable outcomes. We don't deliver taps, we don't build toilets. And although we're trying to meet them halfway, I don't think we'll ever have a strategic plan that where your outcomes are measurable. And I must say, this is international best practice. In our gender-based violence work, for instance, we've looked at what UNIFEM standards, we've looked at
UN standards, how do you monitor gender-based violence, and we are doing exactly what they are doing, which is process indicators. I'm just going to give an example of poverty. If you look at the strategic plan under poverty, it sets out exactly what is to be done during the course of the year. That is then reported on under each department in the annual report, and that is then summarized in the presentation that you have. So the only thing with poverty, if you recall, we reported to this committee. We rolled over for a year because our program budget for 2008 was spent. But other than that, there's been no deviation, and we have achieved 85% of objectives under poverty. So perhaps it is we're not presenting it in a format that makes it clear, but there certainly is a very deep link between the three documents. I don't know if you'd like me to go into more detail as a trial.
I really don't like to get confused almost at the end of the meeting. I thought we were we were accepting the fact that out of your response, out of the CEO's response, that the strategic plan has flaws. Now, you then says there was no deviation. Am I understanding you correct?
Chairperson, on a point of order, we're going to take much time. If I think what the CEO pointed out, that the document is in fact flawed, the strategic plan, that it needs to be reviewed and all of it, and I understand why they say it. The presentation, I also understand, reflects some of what is in the strategic plan. It relates to the annual report. These are the three documents we're talking about. But I don't think that we need to unravel it now here. I have a very clear understanding that the strat plan has to be then reviewed, put in place, so that we can use it as a tool to ensure that the department is going to deliver on the strategic objectives. That document is important for us because it's the one document that we have to interrogate the CGE to ensure that they are delivering again on the objectives and all of it. So we can have another session with the CGE if necessary, or we can individually take the matter forward, which I will in any case do. I will speak to the officials. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. And I would want to affirm the understanding of Honourable Duncan. I think even if you look at our turnaround strategy, which we presented in this House, it was divided into phases. And the first phase was more looking at quick wins and financial matters of things that will lead us into a clean audit. And when you look into the second phase of that turnaround strategy, it looks specifically into the review of this particular document.
I don't think we need any explanation because I can't see how can they come now. Because okay, they must have with next year's annual report. You know, it's problematic to me what they're doing. And what they're doing is illegal because this was passed by Parliament. So they mustn't come now and say it's flawed and it's this and that because it was accepted in a meeting. They have to write you a letter. A letter on this, and we discussed the letter itself. Thank you.
So I think what the Honourable Hope is saying is very true. It's very true. Be as it may, CEO, that you say you think you want to accept blah blah blah, but what Honourable Hope is saying is true because we all agreed to that strat plan here in Parliament. But now to come and hear that it has flaws, You know, it puts us in a very difficult situation. Because all along, we were comparing your annual report, we were matching it with the strategic plan that we have in front of us. But let's leave it there for now. We'll find another time to see how we can put things together. But be as it may, I would still want to know, how soon do we think we are closer to moving towards an unqualified statement? Maybe one person can say it then, but I want it because all of us are here. I wanted to get opinions of everybody from the CGE. Acknowledge the fact that it's not very clear in the ages report. They lastly where he just says you have improved, but then it wasn't specific to say improved on what. He just said improved, you know, from a disclaimer to qualified. Then he said improved, but he wasn't specific to say improved on what. So just briefly.
Thanks, Chair. I think we would have to go back to the actual turnaround strategy document that we had presented before this House. When you look at that document, we made an undertaking to move in this financial year under review to a qualified audit, and in the next financial year to get a clean or an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General.
From the issues as well, when you look at the two previous disclaimers, the issues that were raised that were disclaimed raised by the Auditor General were around 132 issues. But now, when you read this report, they've actually gone down under 15 issues. See, although they are under 12, yeah. But we had bigger issues, and then they're still big, but we've actually managed to scale them down to under 15.
I'm just saying, you know, as a person can see what is happening, they only have about four things that the auditor was not satisfied with. So they can move to an unqualified report with emphasis again on matters. Because I think that's going to be an outcome. It won't be qualified again because it was qualified with emphasis because if they moved up. But if they make a mistake, then they can go back again to qualified with emphasis. But I think it's going to be, their next report should be unqualified with emphasis.
Mm. You know, I think also what we need to do, we still had lots of questions to ask, but the time is against us. For instance, on the issues of how far have you gone with regards to auditing the current legislation that we have, your Sexual Offences Act, your Domestic Violence Act, on the implementation of them. How far have we gone, have the CGE gone? I like to say we. I'm not part of the CGE, but I like to say we because we are all in this thing together. If
part of the National Agenda Machinery, I think
I'm trying to say, if the CG wins, we all win, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to get at. And also as far as our international instruments, how far have we gone? But what we will do, because of time, we will put some of these things together and send it to the CGE, and then you can you know, you can respond in writing on some of these things. Lastly but not least, we'll have the Honorable Mabe to round off and say some of the comments she has.
Anyway, thanks, Chair. Now that you've given me an opportunity to say something, I wanted to reserve my comments. But I just want to say that the intentions of establishing the CGE, I think they were good. As the CEO has said, that they have... they were established in terms of the constitution and they will exist. I don't know, maybe I misunderstood him, but I want to believe that the intentions were very good. But unfortunately, my observation is that along the way, people saw an opportunity of making money and there was no accountability. I think that we need to agree. And I'm not convinced that... By a comment that says that the money that cannot be accounted for cannot be defined as fraud or what. For me, any expenditure that is not in line with the PFMA, it is fraud, finish and class. And I know that most people who are serving in the CGE are graduates from the university, so they understand clearly what the law requires in terms of spending money. So, Chair, what is at stake for me here is the 14 million that is awaiting condonement. Of course, by the only authority that can do that is the National Treasury through our recommendation, if we agree. But before we can even think about moving towards the condonement, I want the CGE to give us a commitment of saying that they will be able to recover some of the money. Because 14 million is a lot, you know. If I heard the CFO correctly, he said their budget is 50 million and the irregular expenditure is approximately 12% of that, which can make it plus minus 7 million. It's a lot of money. So if we can just get that commitment that they will to take it upon themselves to make sure that we recover some of that money, so that they can qualify the statement that says the money that has been spent, the money that has been that is not accounted for, it cannot be translated as fraud and all that. So for you to qualify that, give us a commitment that we want that money back. If you give us that commitment that you'll help us in terms of recovering that money or showing us in black and white, this is so much has been spent, we chose so-and-so, giving him or her a tender for so much instead of giving so much. If we can get that, I think now what is at stake for me is that amount, because at the end of the day, this committee must sit again, recommend to Treasury that CGE, we must condone this, they must be given this condonement. Wave 14 million that we don't know who took that money. At the other hand, they are saying that it cannot be regarded as fraud. I'm not convinced and I'm not happy.
You know what? I don't want to reopen this again. But I'm not reopening it, but what I want to say, if we listen carefully to what the AG's office said, there's a need for an investigation to take place. And he went on to say, at this stage, we cannot actually utter and say whether it was fraud or what. So at this stage, I don't think it would be correct to directly say it was fraud. He actually emphasized the fact that there is a need for the investigation to take place. Internal investigation to take place, and that will then determine. But for now, for us to state it's fraud, it would not be correct. Mm-hmm. And it would also not be correct to say irregular expenditure amounts to fraud. It would also not be correct to say that. But let's close it on that note.
we will do what we have promised to do, to send the extra questions that have been left out. On your side as the CGE, I guess you would also commit yourselves to move towards that, what is it, your turnaround strategy. Let's stick to that for now. I must say it wasn't an easy meeting today, but that is Parliament. Thank you very much. It's a meeting as adjourned.